Shalom, shalom, everyone. This is Jaina Israel with another edition of the Yehuda Project. I'm going to wait till the co-host are on the line. If you are a part of the Members of a Better World, Prince Asiel Show, please push 1 so we can get you on board. And here we go. I'm going to play some music for you. Here we go.
Under is real sky.
All right, all right. We're going to go right to our co-host, Prince Amiel. Are you there?
Shalom, shalom. Can you hear me?
Shalom. Yes, sir. We can hear you quite well. How are you today?
Doing wonderful. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing very well. We wanted you go ahead and introduce yourself, and then you can start with whatever topic you'd like to talk about.
Yes, sister. This is Prince Amiel here, the Spiritual Alternatives and Better World radio show under the guise of the Yehuda Project. And we would like to welcome all of our brothers and sisters all over the world, wherever we are scattered, and those from the house of Yehuda, the royal bloodline, and for all the Hebrew Israelites and all the people of the world who are searching and looking for a better day and a better way. We welcome you to this show. And in the beginning of the show, we played a song called Israel Skies. Israel Skies was written by Prince Amiel, and at that time when he wrote the song, he had a very good friend whose name was India Irie, and we worked on the song together. Many of you may know her. We did some songs on a CD called Push On. We did two duets, and she did some background work. So shout out to her. And we absolutely thank her. So the spirit that you feel from the song is the spirit of all of those, including musicians and producers and everybody who was involved in the project, because what it did, it depicted the reality of that peace and that tranquility that was supposed to come in the latter days when Yah would deliver us back to our land, language, and culture. So that song was written while in Israel, under Israel's skies. And the interesting thing is it was written in the evening, and many nights in Israel, Dimona, Rod, Mitzvah, in the Negev, when you go out, especially when you go up to the mountains, the stars look like you can just pluck them out the sky and eat them, you know. And the breeze is so beautiful, and it's so wonderful. So I am thankful to Yahweh, Kadosh Yisrael, for blessing me and others to sojourn, to go into that land, and to be in that land for over 50 years on behalf of our people and under the guidance of our God and under the guidance of Prince Asiel to establish a base for a people who have been disenfranchised. For not just 400 years, but for over 2,000 years. So again, I'd like to thank you, Sister Yanina, and the Yehuda Project for your foresight and your beautiful spirit and the reality of us connecting in this day and time, which is the most important day and time now, because it is time for Israel to rise and take its place. So, Sister Yanina, did you have anything, comment?
Well, I just want to say that I think that it is really a vital point at this point in our juncture. When you talk about the Holy Land and the things that you all have gone through there, we talked about battle. Can you tell us about some of your battles that you've gone through?
Well, first of all, you know that at the time we started going into Israel, which is the late 60s, early 70s, we were persona non grata in Israel, which meant that if you went to Israel, the only way that a black person or a black man, a black woman could go, you had to go through a Christian church tour. And at that time, you just couldn't go to Israel as a black person and just go in the country. And so that's what we were faced with. So the reality even of going with a church tour, they would have security on the buses as you toured the land to make sure that when you got off the bus that you followed this prescribed route, that you would not leave the tour. You could not leave the tour at all at any time. Being black people. Now, of course, Europeans, they can go, they can do whatever they want. But at that time, you have to remember that racism was rampant in Israel, and the reality of those who govern Israel is to come to terms with the fact that Israel is run by Ashkenazi Jews, and Ashkenazi means German. So you're talking about a land run by German Jews, and certainly most of us know what the Germans were really known for, and that was at that time was racial hatred, and they felt that they were the superior race, and so that's what we ran into. Not to say that there weren't some beautiful people in Israel who, you know, who welcomed us and even gave us help, but the political atmosphere was such that black people could not travel to the land, and so that was the first thing that we found ourselves faced with. But the prelude to that was leaving and going into Liberia for 2.5 years. And the reason for going into Liberia for 2.5 years was we felt that we needed some time to purge ourselves from many of the negative characteristics and negative things that we were doing and had been doing in captivity of America, that we needed at least 2.5 years to purge ourselves of enough of it so that we could find favor in Yah, so when it was time for us to go into the Holy Land, that he would bless us. And as it stands today from a historical perspective, we did wind up in the land, so I would venture to say that we did at least please him some, you know. But the other thing that we were faced with, this is even before getting to Israel, is that when we went into Liberia, we knew nothing about living in the bush because we didn't go to the cities. We went into the bush. And when we went into the bush, you have to imagine people coming out of the States were not destitute people. Many of the people, the saints, the Israelites who came out for that first incursion into the Holy Land, they owned houses, they had stellar credit, they lived good lives. But the Spirit moved upon them, and many of them sold their possessions and got on planes and went to that work within that 2 years, Liberia. Now, going into the bush, the first thing we didn't know, we knew that it rained, but we had no idea that it rained for 2 months or 3 months at a time. And the raindrops were so hard, when we left, we bought a number of tents that we got from Sears Roebuck, right? So you can imagine how long they lasted with the downpours and the powerful rainy season. After a short while, those tents tore up, and the beauty of Yahweh was that he had prepared a place for us, because at that time we were befriended from some Garveyites who had moved there years prior to that, and knew the land very well and knew how to live on the land. They befriended us, and they taught us how to live in the bush. And then not only that, at a particular point in time, you have to imagine we were doing things, whatever we could, to fund that first settlement in Liberia. And, of course, there were times we ran out of money, and sometimes it was so bad that the African brothers would come with a barrel full of bananas, and we didn't even have a dime to buy bananas. So when we befriended the brothers and sisters of the Garveyites, they taught us how to live on the land, and they showed us that we were living in the bush and there was food everywhere. So you can imagine how out of touch as African Americans that we had been, Negroes and colors, how detached we were from the very land and the very soil that which we are made from, that we would be in the bush and food would be everywhere and we would not be able to recognize it. So And then you're talking about mamba snakes, and you're talking about driver ants. And I don't know if the mamba is one of the most poisonous snakes in the world. And driver ants can be up to an inch to 2.5-3 inches long. So you're talking about ants with claws. And they come in such a large number that you can hear them coming, because they're coming by the hundreds of thousands. And when they come, they lay everything to waste. So you don't have a lot of time. You have to get out the way, get in the tree, run away, do whatever you have to do. So we found ourselves in an environment that we were totally unprepared for, but Yah, in his beneficence and in his love for his people, he saw us through. And that was the first phase. But I also want to mention from a political and geopolitical perspective, when we were talking about leaving and going to Israel, one of the things we used to say was that we had escaped COINTELPRO. Now, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I want our people to be clear of the price that was paid for us to get into the land. And it was a severe price. You imagine, we left, and for most of you who don't know what COINTELPRO, it was a program that was designed under J. Edgar Hoover when they created the FBI. And that was the program under which many of the black leaders got killed, black organizations got marginalized or decimated. We talking about the Panthers, we talking about Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Marcus Garvey. As a matter of fact, the major directive, and it quote, the major directive out of the COINTELPRO program that came out of the FBI was to cut off the rise of the black messiah, the person that would motivate and inspire and electrify the militant masses. So you see that even in that directive, they use the Hebrew terminology, which is messianic, which is short for Messiah. In no other language is that word used except in the Hebrew. So what they were actually alluding to is that they were looking for a black Messiah. They were looking for a people who would be whose eyes would be turned back to Israel. And so, but we thought we had escaped because we didn't die. But the problem was is that they had another program for us. And the program was let us work hard to get to Israel and they would deal with us in Israel, thinking that, first of all, we wouldn't survive Liberia. But once we got into Israel and dealt with the racism that was there at that time, we couldn't get jobs, couldn't get birth certificates, couldn't get anything that was necessary for us to survive. So we had to call on the ingenuity of our God, our Yahuwah, who again had favor on us. And we moved according to that spirit and had faith. Just like our patriarchs in the early days, Sarah, Abraham, and all of them, we had that same unwavering faith. And as a result, we've been in the land for over 40-some years, so almost 50 years. So the reality is that, and we're still paying prices for that, because just like you say, a battle or a war, there are casualties. And there were many casualties along the way. And so there are so many heroes and heroines that we, those of us who survived the war, are working on and have been working toward making sure that all of those fallen warriors and warrior sisters and warrior children get their just due and are dealt with appropriately as it relates to their sacrifices and their heroism. So that's just some of the things that was sort of rough. And one of the other things I want to mention is that for some of us, we were, like myself, I was a vegan. I never smoked or drank when I came up, so I didn't have any drug problems or anything like that. But I didn't smoke or didn't drink. But what happened was that when we used to fly, the security services of Israel would be on the plane looking at the black people on the plane. So they would be looking at everything that we were doing. So you have to imagine a person like myself, I don't smoke, I don't drink, and I don't eat meat. So for those years that I was traveling there, we literally were sneaking into the land. And one of the things that I had to do was I had to smoke, I had to drink, and I had to eat meat on my travels to Israel all the way till I got to the gate and got into immigration. And so that was a major price for me because I never smoked and never drank. You know what I'm saying? And I was a vegan. So just that little testimony lets you know that and that there were other people who had other personal sacrifices. So there were a lot of prices paid. And so these were some of the things that, because war changes everything. It changes the nature of everything. And it causes you to have to do things that you don't want to do, have to do things that you thought you'd never do, you know. But when you're looking at your family, you're looking at feeding your family, and you're looking at protecting your people and fulfilling your destiny and your purpose, which is to help bring a people from slavery back to the fullness of themselves, the people of God in the land of God. So if you wanted to,
wow.
At this juncture, if you wanted to open, you know, for questions, if there's anybody, any questions or comments, we'd be happy to do that.
I have a question for you myself.
Yes.
Why were you made to smoke and drink?
Well, the thing is that they knew that the camp that we came out of, that we didn't smoke and we didn't drink, one of the requisites for the camp, for the Israelite camp that we came out of, is that if you weren't a vegan, you were you eventually had to be going in that direction. So they knew that. That was IMO. So if I'm on the plane and I'm not drinking and I'm not smoking or I'm not eating according to the way I know how to eat, they can see that because that's what they're looking for. Yet those are the telltale signs for the Israelites who returned to the Holy Land in that time. And you follow what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
So when you go to the James Bond stuff and all these movies they got out about espionage and intrigue and all of that, look, I'm telling you, it was every bit of that. And I know there's thousands of people out there who know what I'm talking about. It was every bit of that. But, you know, they said the revolution would not be televised. It was nothing we could say while we were going through it. It's only in this day and time now that if we at least have the time to articulate the things that happened to us, and that's why we are so happy with connecting with the Yehuda Project, being able to give us the ability to articulate some of this, and you ask some of the most wonderful questions because we are at this juncture in time. We really want to tell what happened so that our people would know. I mean, when they started coming back and forth to Israel, they had no idea what we went through. Some of us disappeared for years because we actually did time. I mean, they were after us, and we were after Israel, you know. And we knew that it was winner take all. And just to give you an idea, and I'm not embellishing on this by any means, we don't need to toot no horns at this particular juncture in time because we got the man. The reality is that this was our spirit from the beginning. It was that we would do anything that was that we felt that we had to do in order to get our land back. Now, so to typify what I'm saying is that we burnt a lot of bridges, right? But a lot of bridges that we burnt, we didn't burn them so the enemy couldn't come after us. We burnt them so we'd have no way to get back, so that we would be committed to the victory, you know, and have no way to turn around and no way to go back. Just committed, so we had to forge on. And one of the clarion calls was, you know, if you had a problem with something, you know, leadership or somebody, you come back when they say, hey, well, go make it happen. Go get it done. And we wrought those miracles that, that the Creator said that we were going to, that we were going to, that we were going to perpetuate in the latter day. We wound up doing that based upon going with the spirit of Yahuwah Kadosh Yisrael. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, let me ask you this question. When you say you burned some bridges, was it for the protection of the people? Was it for, I know you said for you all to forge on and to continue doing what you're doing. Could you elaborate on that a little bit? And I want to make an announcement. For you all who want to ask questions, please feel free to push one at any point and we'll get you on. Go ahead, sir.
Well, what I'm saying to you is I can speak personally. For me personally, I looked at the fact that you can't ask the slave master as to how you're going to get free. What is he going to say? So that means if the slave master was controlling all the wealth and had everything, the transportation and all of those things, we had to figure out a way to use those things. And I remember when I was brought up on trial, the judge asked me after he looked at all the stuff that that I had done, he asked me, he said, what did y'all do with all these diapers and baby bottles and baby powder and clothes, children's clothes and all that stuff? I said, Judge, we're building a community. And he sort of laughed because you would have thought that we would have been tempted to buy houses and cars and all of those types of things, but we were building the world. So whatever we did was to use, and it said in the scriptures, to use the resources of your enemy to develop, to build your world. And that's what we did, and we paid the price for it, but we're in Israel today. And I have children and grandchildren there, and all my children have Hebrew names, and my grandchildren have Hebrew names, and all of those who are offshoots of my family are there and have access to that land today based upon the prices of not just myself, but many of the brothers and sisters who were with us in that time and are still with us, the prices that we paid. So the reality of it is that, and it's been sort of hard. You know, only, and when I say hard, it's totally relative, in that imagine that you're going out trying to save somebody, and you, the person is drowning, right? And you go out and you go save the people, you bring it back to shore, and the people are mad at you, or they don't talk to you at all. Or they deem you, you know, like you're crazy or whatever. It's almost like it had been like that, that we had to go at a time when nobody really appreciated the fact that we went to Israel. As a matter of fact, there were a lot of people saying we shouldn't have went, and then we shouldn't have went at the time that we went. And then the question was asked, well, how did you know it was time to go to Israel? Spirit said it was time to go, and we went. So obviously it was correct. But you have to imagine that a prophet ain't a prophet in his own homeland. And we look to a lot of people, we look like we were crazy and lost our minds and all of that. So we grew up revolutionary. And so we were doing the revolutionary that day and time, you know, based upon integration and all of that. Many of our people began to take on the tenets of Europeans, forgetting that they were slaves, and thought that that integration was going to bring a even playing field, only to find out today for many of them that it is not.
Wow. Well, we have someone here that's pushed one, area code 773. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, I'd like to ask the Prince a question. I was listening to the history of how they started in Israel, and I'd like to know, how did they sustain the community and generate revenue and things to keep the community going and so that the population could survive? And now, how are they sustaining the community and generating the things financially that the community needs to keep it going?
Well, first of all, in deference to many of those who took part in this, a lot of people sold their homes, sold their cars, donated whatever they could donate. But you're talking about sustaining thousands of people in a outside of America and all of that. So I just have to just be straight up and tell y'all that I was part of a committee, so to speak, whose job it was to sacrifice whatever we need to sacrifice to make sure that we would keep the dream going. And many of us wound up going to jail because we wound up doing things that that were deemed against the law of Europeans. So, you know, we come up under a justice system that if you stole some bread because you was hungry, or you stole some bread because you just wanted to steal it, you still get the same time. And so for myself, the spirit was, you know, you either make money or you take money. And needless to say, there were some of us who didn't mind making it and taking it if it was necessary to keep the dream alive. Because certainly there was nobody going to finance the revolution. Nobody was going to finance us going to Israel. In the scriptures, in the Holy Scriptures, it gave us concepts and ideas as to how a people, would extricate themselves from certain conditions, certainly the condition of slavery. And a lot of us, and when I say a lot of us, I ain't talking about a lot, but it was quite a few of us who wound up doing time. And when people, I used to go back to places, people say, where you been? You know, I'd be like, you know, I was in Israel, I'm in Liberia, but I was locked up or in exile, you know, or on the run or something like this. So many of us experienced that. And nobody told us to do these things. When I came and I went to Israel and I saw them babies and how free they were and how happy they were, because you have to imagine going to a place where children can just walk around unfettered. They're almost dark. They can go to anybody's house in the community to eat. They can go to anybody's house to sleep. Anybody's house and give water. And when you move to the community and you would you, the first thing they would do, they would bow to you and greet you. Muslim would shalom, or they ask you for candy or something. You know, but experiencing that, a place where you didn't have to lock the doors. Our doors were never locked. It's like you could live in there and fear of anybody. The children could be free and they could play, and we didn't really have to worry about them because we had created a holding environment. Now, in creating that holding environment, somebody can protect us, Holy Spirit, for the inconvenience to change itself, because we're not going to make Joshua Kadosh Israel mythical. You understand? This was a real, this was a reality, and it was a reality check for some of us, because they didn't let us just come into the land. They didn't let us just let us roam the land. It wouldn't give us many things that they really give. They made it extremely hard. And if we had water, they turn the water off, or they poison the water, or they would cut the electricity off. And they would do anything to discourage us. As a matter of fact, we have a film called The Show of Strength, which some of these things we're going to make available at some particular point, but it shows a standoff between the community in Dimona and the security services, the armed forces of the Israeli government, with attack dogs, tanks, Uzis, all of the weapons that are necessary to deal with an armed conflict. That they, at one point, they had kidnapped about 30 or 40 of our people from what they called a moshav. It was an orange moshav where we would go out, some of our people would go out and pick oranges and things like that, and they'd stay there overnight or for a week or weekend or whatever. And they just rounded them up, men, women, and children, elders, and everything, and put them in jail. And so we decided that we were going to march to Jerusalem. And we picked a day to march. And when we got up that morning, everybody was dressed in white. Everybody was in the center of the community. And we said we were going to march. Once Benjamin gave the order, we were going to march to Jerusalem. And we got up, shortly after we got up, they had surrounded the community with all of the apparatus I just told you about, including helicopters and all those things, because they had continually said that we were not going to survive. As a matter of fact, they threatened us. At some point, they said they would kill us. There was one point where they said we were worse than the PLO, and that what needed to happen. This was a government official, a high government official, said that we should be put on a boat, and the boat pushed out into the Mediterranean and sunk. You know, so that's the way that's the way that we were viewed. And so that show of strength is on video, where the Israeli officials came down to try to talk us out of marching to Jerusalem, and the edict came down. Well, first of all, somebody thought that Ben-Ami said go. And when you view the film, you'll see the priesthood, who was at the head of the line, they start pushing the Israelis with guns. The Israelis had guns. They were armed. And you could see the fear, that they knew that that was an aggression on our part. We just thought, somebody thought Ben-Ami said go. And they started pushing, and the soldiers started tightening up, but they were so afraid, you could see it on their faces. They didn't really want that type of confrontation, because they know the scriptures too. And so I'm only bringing that up in the context that y'all had no idea what we were going through. But sometimes we would come back here, and man, it'd just be a respite from the battle. You know, or we'd be on furlough from jail, or we jump parole or whatever, and we would continue to do our work. So I thank you for that question, because freedom is definitely not free. There's a price to pay for it, and certainly your enemy gonna make sure you pay the price.
And there's some feedback in the phones. I'm not sure who it is, Does someone have their phone on mute? I mean, on speaker?
No, I have my phone speaker so I can hear you. But when we were talking before, you didn't hear me.
Okay, we had a caller from area code 212 that was on and he was holding, so I'm hopefully he'll call back in. Maybe his phone call dropped.
Right.
But did you say that they used to poison the water?
Yeah, they even poisoned the water, man. It was ridiculous. You know, some of our people, I mean, had major problems. We had some people that passed and all of that from some of the vicious ways by which they dealt with us in the early days, you know. And again, I'm saying that it wasn't everybody, but the political structure was certainly following a mandate. And if I might, I want to go to the 83rd chapter of Psalm. I know we talked about it last week, but in this particular context, the way the conversation went, I want to read this particular scripture to show you how serious this was and that this was predicted by David and our fathers. Because, first of all, leper can't change his spot. So all throughout these scriptures that have ultimate geopolitical import, many of the things that we went through, we had already gone through before. So if I might, I'm going to read the 83rd chapter of Psalm because I would just like to put it in the hearing of our people, the seriously prophetic nature of our people who are mothers and fathers and our ancient ancestors who would leave us a document that would not only elucidate for us many of the pitfalls that would befall us, but who would give us information and good information so that in these last days we would be able to correlate all of this stuff and see our way through. So I want to read from the 83rd chapter of Psalms. And you all will understand this when I read it, solely relative to the context of the conversation at this point. It says, "Keep not thy silence, O God, and hold not thy peace. And be not still, O God, for lo, thine enemies make a tumult. And they that hate thee have lifted up their head. They have taken crafty counsel against thee and thy people, and consulted against thy hidden ones. They have said, Come, let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. For they have consulted together with one consent, and they are confederate against thee." And so I wanted to read that in the hearing so that you understand that there were forces, these forces were committed, these are ancient concepts, that Israel would never make it into the land ever, that we would be out of that land and we would never return. So the way had been hedged up. And there was a confederacy of nations from all over the land, not just European nations, but other brother sister nations too, who was in their best interest that we would never again in our land, speaking our language and perpetuating our culture. And so this confederacy had at its foundation the erasing of the memory. And that's the problem that we've been having for the past 400 years, because the whole thing was designed to erase our memory so that we would not remember that we were Israel. And so what has happened, based upon many of our patriarchs and brothers who created churches just to disguise the fact that these were Hebrew Israelites trying to worship, and get the memory back, that at a particular point in time, they really had to come to terms with the fact that we were waking up. And so they had to turn up the fire. They had to turn up the heat. So when Martin Luther King got killed, they were turning up the heat. And we were in the streets rioting and all of those things, but it was the revolutionary fervor of our people. A lot of them didn't even understand that in them they were warriors and sister warriors and children warriors, which is what we're experiencing today. We got a lot of children that are warriors and don't have the war to fight, so they're fighting each other, so that the name of Israel would be no more in remembrance. And I remember during the 60s and 70s, George Clinton had an album, and one of his album was called, I think it was called America Eats Its Young or something like that. But he had this statement on the album. He said, pimping their instincts until their ability to think was amputated. Now, doesn't that sound like mind control or mind erasing? So when you are taught certain things and you come up and you have this oppression, and then you have the psychological and sociological oppression, then you have this financial oppression, and then you have this debilitating physical oppression coming from bad diets and all those types of things, your memory, your mind focuses on survival. It can't even expand to consciousness to hear God. Why? Because you've been interrupted at your basic primal instinct. And so it was easy to erase the memory, first of all, taking us so far away from Israel, us having gone through the slave trade and being dropped in the Middle Passage to many of the islands of the sea, including Bermuda, which is one of the last stops on the way in, millions of black men and women dumped into the ocean and all of that. And so we had this shared psychosis. And then you have to remember that there was a time when they were hanging black men and black women and black boys and girls and just doing all kind of atrocious things. So it would be hard to get to some semblance of clear thinking when you have that much oppression and depression in your life. And so we shared that psychosis as a people. So that the name of Israel would be no more in remembrance. There were all kind of programs to make sure that we would not remember. But our God is God, and all throughout history, and I think Prince Asiel took us back to 1600s, when the first Hebrew was recognized by the enemy, really, in America. And you trace it on through the churches and all the way up to present day, where we are coming out of that deep sleep.
Right, absolutely. So I have some people online. I have a question for you about Chicago. We fast forward 40 years later, and they're killing each other in the streets of Chicago. And we have churches on every corner, and Chicago has one of the largest population of a Hebrew community. What do you think the problem is?
Okay, I want to read something from a book. It's by a sister named Karen Sawyer. It's called The Dangerous Man. And I want to read an excerpt from the chapter called A Dangerous Religion, and it reads on this wise. It says, before Christianity, the Roman Emperor Constantine was a follower of the Mithras cult, the Persian version of the same thing. He converted to Christianity in order to hitch the Christians to his warlike empire building in. And because there were more of them, and they were more powerful, he then forced Christianity on the empire, and it became the state religion by empirical decree, where you had to believe in it or else. The Council of Nicaea, AD 325 AD, the Roman Church has had immense power, and they have ruined culture after culture, forcing people to believe in their religion. The Holy Inquisition was effectively thugs in Cossacks who were licensed by the church to go around torturing and killing, and most usefully stealing the lands and the property of anyone that they could find or reason to condemn, rather like church-approved Nazis. They even condemned some wealthy dead people so that they could legally steal their property. In the case of the Cathars of Languedoc, the church saw such a threat that they wiped the whole nation out in mass genocide. So much for spirituality. Because spirituality and religion are two different things. Religion is a political tool for the express purpose of maintaining the status quo and keeping power over ignorant people. And that's what it is, and that's what our people are finding out today. The significant thing is that Christianity was hitched to this war genocidal machine. And if it ain't true, my question is this a Christian country?
Yes, it is.
And the answer would be yes, it is, right?
Yes, it is.
And
it is.
Leaving Christianity, right?
Yes, we are.
And my question is, are they at war all over the planet?
Yes, we are.
So that means that the leopard ain't changed its spots, have it?
No, it has not.
So just he hitched his war-like genocidal machine to Christianity. That means he connected his manifest destiny, his government, his war apparatus to Christianity, and under that apparatus, he went all over the planet and is still going all over the planet today. I remind you that with the assertion of the Christian church, at one particular point, they would say that the New Testament was no longer applicable, right?
Uh-huh.
But we all, many of us went to church. We grew up learning the Ten Commandments and reading out the Old Testament, right?
Uh-huh.
The warlike machine is so meticulous. And it's so diabolical and insidious that a child of 18, 19 years old who grew up on the Ten Commandments, who went to Bible school, who went to church, and all of those things, you know what I'm saying, all the church programs, you know, everything, but learn the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not this, thou shalt not that, thou shalt not kill. But when you are drafted into the army, or you go into the services, you go through what they call basic training for 6 months. Correct?
Correct.
In that 6 months, this war machine has figured out that they can get you to kill somebody that you don't know for them. When you grew up on the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill. It'll take them 6 months to make you a killer. Now, I'm asking you, is that insidious? Yes, it's insidious. But that's the nature of the beast.
Okay. Let me make an announcement real quick. Anyone that would like to join the conversation, please feel free to push one. But what about the children in Chicago? What do you think the problem is? Because we have a large Hebrew population in Chicago, and it is considered the number one murder capital of the world. Why is that?
Okay, it seems like an oxymoron, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this is the thing. We are still slaves in America. Contrary to popular belief, even for those who are making millions of dollars, I always say that the person, whether you're a sports person or an actor and you got millions and millions of dollars, first of all, if it ain't in your mattress, you ain't got it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's in somebody's bank and it's in somebody else's control. So that means if they turn the electricity off for a while, you ain't got no money. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Now, in the 80s, Prince Asiel led a cadre of courageous brothers and sisters, because this is not the first time that this situation has cropped up like this and come to this these types of proportions. It happened in the late 70s and the 80s, and I was part of the group that Prince Asiel chose, along with great leaders at that particular point in time, and they took on the task of bringing peace to Chicago, to the inner cities of Chicago. And at that time, you know, you had Cabrini Green and some of the most other places, right, that uh-huh. don't exist anymore. So what happened is they actually went into the prisons and spoke to the gang leaders and got the gang leaders to call for truces. And for years, you didn't have that type of thing going on because the brothers and sisters stepped up in that day and time. Now, what happened is, now, we're supposed to be going into the land and focusing on the land and getting the land back in Israel, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we took the time to Prince Asiel to work with this issue that was successful. As a matter of fact, he was on the Oprah Winfrey Show during that time with some of the gang leaders and some of the participants who worked diligently for this ceasefire. And again, it was deemed a success because there was a ceasefire and it held for years. But I'm going to sort of elucidate something that hasn't really been put out there like that. It may have, but I just haven't heard people talking about it. Now, there are a lot of reasons for this. First of all, we're strangers in a land that is not ours, first of all. And we're under the dictates and the oppression of a people who have already considered us a non-people. And so the political apparatus and the political structure has done what it's supposed to do to maintain that we would be subhuman and less than a class of people. But if you remember, the gang thing was territorial all across the United States, all across Chicago, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, what happened when they tore down Cabrini Green and a bunch of those other places, and they knew what they were doing, they shifted. Now, remember, gang warfare is territorial. Are you following me?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
It's about territory. Now, you're not supposed to encroach on territory. What they did when they got rid of Cabrini Green and some of the other areas that held gangs, they pushed all those people to what they call Ingleside, which is where most of this stuff is happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they took opposing forces and put them on top of opposing forces. Now, what did they think was going to happen? Exactly what's happening
right
now. Yeah. How do you take warring factions and put them in the same place?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get war. Because now the people who were already in Inglewood, right? The people already there, how do you think they feel when the gangs that they were fighting from a distance are now in their neighborhood?
Yeah, that's not good.
Now, that's only one aspect of it, but I'm saying the sociological and psychological and the financial factors have created a situation. I remember they did this experiment with some mice, and they were all fed, and they were all, you know, they watered them and everything, and they were living happy. But then they took the water and the food from them, and the rats began to fight and kill each other. And eventually they killed each other off until there was one left, and that one was maimed. And I'm saying that it says that the devil deceived the whole world, and the devil has created a situation where a dispossessed people can never get to a point of stabilization. This dispossessed people can never get to a point of stabilization in America, and it is never going to happen because the whole thing is institutionalized, you know, in that government policies and all of these things, the legislation, the laws that they come up with every day, you know, they unbeknownst to you, you know, they affect you every day, so you're oppressed every day. And so young people who don't have a war to fight, they don't fight each other. And then the older people going to be trying to figure out how to get out the way because they ain't trying to fight nobody, you know. And but they got to live in the same areas because they don't have money either. They don't have resources either. And if people, you know, this thing about, hey, y'all should pull yourselves up by your own bootstraps, that's a damnable lie. If the playing field was even,
that's true,
for 400 years, that may be a possibility.
That's true.
But I'm saying, and for those psychologists and sociologists who have the tendency to say, well, you know, slavery's over, so you can't use that. If you don't use it, you're not operating from the correct premise. Because you got to go back to the Willie Lynch papers, how to break a horse, which is what they use to break down the black family, break the relationship down between the black man and the black woman. And you can attribute that going all the way back to King Leopold, who's in Belgium, who taught Europeans how to break black people, how to work them sun up and sun down and don't pay them. Now, to show you how interesting that is, isn't it interesting that if you owe a business some money, they'll come after you with everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when they owe you some money, you got to work God-like to get your money back, if you get it at all.
That's true.
They learned that from King Leopold. And for those of you scholars out there, you got to go back and you got to see how powerful King Leopold was, because he never set foot in Africa, but he set the precedence and the paradigm for how white people would subjugate black people all over Africa and all over the world. And he ruled the Congo. I don't know if you all remember this movie called Rwanda with, what was his name? What was the actor's name? The actor who was in charge of the hotel, and when they were trying to get out, because all the forces were against him, and they didn't think they were going to get out. He called his people in Belgium to get him and his family out. What a lot of people don't understand is that the Congo was held by Belgium. And if you go back to the Berlin Conference, is when they, all the European nations, divvied up Africa and took one or two nations for themselves. Well, Belgium took the Congo. So when you look at Rwanda, even if you go back and look at Rwanda, you'll see the reality of the Eurocentric policy of divide and conquer when they played the two factions in Rwanda against each other and created those wars that cost countless lives and had our people fighting each other, you know. And so when you go and you look at that movie and you study the reality of the Berlin Conference, a lot of people were watching the movie but didn't understand the geopolitical dynamic, that it was Belgium who was in charge of that realm. And so the brother that played the hotel manager, he worked for Belgium. So I'm only bringing that up so that our people would understand that this is an insidious reality that we're dealing with right here. So when you're talking about children in our neighborhood, this is how far-reaching that a king in Belgium and the policies that he set are still affecting our children today. Divide and conquer. And I want to say something about this divide and conquer, too, because for years we've been saying the adversary seeks to divide and conquer us. Well, let me put it in your hearing right now. That is the wrong psychological and sociological premise. The correct premise is that we are divided and conquered. That's different from divide and conquer. We are divided and conquered. This is the reason why we are having these problems today, including the children, because we can't rally together to do anything. Man, you got church pastors and all that who don't even talk to each other, who have multitudes of people in their congregations. And you got leaders who don't even talk to each other, won't even be in a room with each other. And I know these things firsthand because these are the realms that we operate in. People, because of their personal leaders, because of their personal whims and wishes, won't talk to another leader. The people can't get together because the leaders won't let them get together.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem with our children. That's the problem with our children. And you want to change it? Then these people who are leaders and church leaders, they need to get off their high horse and get over their attitudes with each other and do what they're supposed to do, which is to work on behalf of the people. Because it's the people in their congregations whose children are in the street. It's the people in the congregation that got to have bars and security on their houses and in the neighborhood. Now, if we want to blame somebody else, yeah, I say King Leopold, what he put in motion, right? But we're supposed to be intelligent people. Where's the intelligence of the people? No, they're caught up in their feelings. They're caught up in their feelings, and they're caught up in their own personal agendas. So we can say straight up in this day, although Europeans have done what they've done to us, they ain't the problem right now.
That's true.
Those who are the leadership, call themselves leading the people and preachers and preaching for the people and all that, they not talking. Can you imagine if all the preachers worked together? Can you imagine if all the leaders worked together, how many people would be working on behalf of the welfare of our people?
Mm-hmm.
People who have all kinds of skills, all kinds of intelligence levels. I mean, to be brought to the table on this problem, man, we wipe it out in this generation. But it ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen because the people are selfish. You know, the scriptures say, woe unto the shepherd. And I was privy to a meeting, and I just got to put it out there. I was privy to a meeting of some church pastors. And in the meeting, their conclusion was, they concluded this afterwards, even though they knew it, but how they said it was, we've got to start working together. Now, they've been saying that ever since we had churches. So what are they really saying? They're really saying that they're the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the head can't get together, they ain't going to let the body go nowhere.
That's true. It flows from the head. You're absolutely right.
So I say, woe to the shepherds. That's the problem we're having right now. Yeah, Europeans did a lot of stuff. But at a certain point, you have to draw the line where it's supposed to be. And that line is under leadership.
Wow. So then I agree with you 100% about that. But also, I'd like to add something to that as well, because the war machine controls the church. So that same war machine, the mother of all harlots, control the pastors. So as long as the pastors are being controlled by the head, which is the Catholic Church, they're not going to allow us to come together. But from a community standpoint, then what's wrong with the Hebrews? Because it's just as many Hebrews in the community with the truth as it is pastors without the truth. Why are they not rallying around? Why is it that we can't come together?
Okay, let's deal with the first part. I agree with what you're saying, but I also have to say that at a particular point, self-preservation has kicked in. You understand what I'm saying? A person can come to terms and with self-preservation and take a people's money, then that means he's aware of self-preservation, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so then that means if he's aware of self-preservation, then he's aware that he should be preserving himself against the war machine. So then that means that he is doing that totally conscious. That's
mm-hmm.
my point.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with what you're saying, but in addendum, I'm saying these are people making the choices that they want to make to save themselves.
Oh, absolutely. And it's about money. Absolutely, no doubt.
Now, and the reality, see, this is the thing. The thing is, there's leadership you can see. You know, you can. There's leadership that's in the public eye, right? And then there's leadership you can't see, but they're leading people, right?
That is true.
They got the same problem. They ain't working. They ain't working together.
That is
so
very true.
Yeah, the people don't stand a chance. You know, and I'm saying at this juncture, you know, I'm looking at all these people having babies, and I'm saying, what kind of world are you breaking them into? What is the statement that you are making when you have accepted no life as a life, and then you have babies? What kind of life are you going to give them?
Well,
you know, so
that's a good.
And that's not to say there aren't some great people doing some great things. You understand what I'm saying? But from the whole, we're looking at a serious deficit as it relates to people who will stand up and actually do something about the problem. I want to do something else. One of the Bibles that we use is a Scofield Reference Bible. But let me go back to what you, because I don't want to leave any of your concerns hanging, because you did say, you know, with all of the Hebrews. Well, the presupposition is that all the Hebrews are in the same place, in that many of us know that we have a mandate, worship Yah and do according to His will, and at this particular time in history, we're supposed to be leading our people, leading this exodus back to land, language, and culture, back to the Holy Land, and back to our God. But people have different variations of that, and they have different thoughts about that. And I would like to think that we were all united. But let me leave you with give you a premise, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because we have a tendency to do this, and Europeans have helped with this, with this erroneous paradigm. For years, we grew up saying Africa, right?
Right.
And we're from Africa, and the assumption was that Africa was united, correct?
Correct.
Well, first of all, Africa's a continent. So
right.
When people say they're Americans, you know, they don't say we're North Americans. They say we're Americans because North America is a continent, correct?
Correct.
In the context of America, there are different countries in America. But America is united by federal laws, federal statutes, right, federal mandates, correct? That way,
correct.
It can call itself the country called America, correct?
Correct.
That has not happened. That has not happened in Africa. It has not happened. So those of us who espouse this Africa as if it's some united place, first of all, is a continent. And you have different countries on the continent. And those, and so there are different countries in Africa. But they are not united under one banner. In America, they are united under the American banner. They are not united under an African concept. They are just separate African nations who answer to the fact that they are from Africa. And what we have is tribes and tribalism.
Mm-hmm.
That is the foundational geopolitical reality of Africa. Right? Same thing with the Hebrew camps in America.
Wow. That is very true. So, and that is very, very true, because this phone line, even though there's a lot of callers on this phone line should be filled up, but there are so many isms and schisms that separate us as a people. So many people are separated because of beliefs. And we've never been united on belief. We have always been separated by belief. And it's a shame, but everybody's not going to make it. So I guess we just have to deal with the people who are willing to listen.
And that's what we say all the time, sis. We ain't worried about the people who ain't trying to listen. We ain't trying to do it. I ain't trying to change nobody, because at the end of the day, the only thing that you have control over is yourself. Now, if you can find some people who are relative to yourself and you can work together with them, that's all you need to be worried about. Don't worry about the people who ain't feeling you. Worry about the people and work with the people who are feeling you. Just save yourself
that's
a lot
true.
Of problems.
That's true. So, you know, and that's where we come up at, because we really cut off our own nose to spite our face, and then they steadily yell on their on the PAL talks and the block talks that we need to come together as a nation, but it's under their terms. And everybody's
that's
saying,
right.
Okay, well, when you look at a nation, then a nation is a diverse group of people that believe many different facets, but we all know that Yah is the creator, and we know our ethnicity, but that's not enough. So what would you say to those disgruntled groups that, because they're really undercover keeping up confusion, because if it was about uniting, then we could be reunited under ethnicity.
Well, I guess we answered that question with the previous answer, and that is,
right.
Sis, I ain't really even worried about that. I'm only worried about the people who won't do the work.
That's true. You're right.
Absolutely
right.
The beauty of it is if we do our work, they benefit anyway.
That's true. You're right. You're absolutely right.
So I'm working for their children. Maybe they're not even working for. And you're
that's
working
right,
for their children who they may not even care about. You know what I'm saying? So we're saying people do what they do. The thing is for us to do what we do. And one
that's
of the
true.
Things I try not to spend a lot of time doing is worrying about what other people do. Because at the end of the day, it's what we do, you know.
That's
and
true.
What we do with those of us who want to do what we do. And I ain't mad at nobody. People can do whatever they want, because on the planet, you got free will. You can do whatever you like. But those of us who understand who we are, understand our purpose and what we're supposed to do, we are not going to be deterred, and we have not been deterred. We have land, language, and culture today. Whether anybody likes us or not, they're still going to be beneficiaries when the dust clears.
That's true. And to come in and to add to that, everybody that complained and said, well, you guys weren't supposed to go over there and it was too soon and nobody told you to go over there and whatever you believe, but at the end of the day, when they go to Israel, Dimona is the first place that they go that's Hebrew Israelite. So all of the living in the bushes and the Liberia and the locked up in jail and all the poison water and all the food that you guys had to go through to make that happen, they still benefited from it. And every time one of their feet touched that soil, of Dimona or Arad or wherever they plan to go that the Hebrew Israelites are, you all had to make that happen in order for us to be able to have that journey. So it was beneficial for us out of all of us and all of everyone that's listening under the sound of my voice. The next time somebody says something negative to that point, they're still benefiting from the sacrifice that these people made, and they call them freedom fighters. So we are very grateful that you have done what you have done because you have made us a presence in the land, and that's something that they weren't going to let us do, but you did it anyway with the help of the Most High. So let me open up the lines. Does anyone have any questions, comments, or concerns? Please feel free to push one. But go ahead, Prince Amiel. I'm sorry.
I want to read something relative to what you just said, and it's from a document from one of our meetings like in the 80s or 90s. But I just want to read this paragraph because this is what a lot of people are going through and a lot of people don't understand, you know, because you asked that question about, you know, when people say you shouldn't have gone and it wasn't time to go. I mean, you made that statement, right? I just want you to hear this paragraph. It says, for years, I waited upon other people to affirm, approve, and endorse the call of God on my life. My purpose was something that I had not seen or experienced before. It was unique. It was special and different. So I waited for man to call me into service. The consequences, the six kingly essentials, became dry because of my inactivity. So I took jobs that God didn't say take, ensnared myself in financial debt, or got trapped in situations that I need a miracle to get out of. Trying to be successful outside of your call is vain, futile, and worthless. God's purpose exceeds everything. I had always knew I had a gift to communicate to large numbers of people, but because of fear, doubt, and unbelief of what God gave me, I allowed my gifting to become inactive. Have you allowed your gifts to become dull, dry, and inactive? Reactivate your gift today by sharing your vision with everyone you meet. Find creative ways to express yourself. Through your expression, one day you will rule. So you made mention, because I've been privy to a lot of conversations where people say, well, how did you know, you know, how can you call you? Let's say this. How did you derive at being a queen of your bloodline?
Well, I mean, we can go into that, you know, but it is basically an oral history and a history that came from the Most High, directly came from the Most High.
It came directly from the Most High to you.
Yes, sir.
So you ain't need no cooperation.
Moved
according to Yah talking to you. And Yah talks to everybody. They just ain't listening and don't want to hear what he had to say. But he's talking all the time. So I'm saying when those people say those things, well, who told you this and where'd you learn this at? And I tell them all the time. I say, I just know. So if you don't like what I know, go do some studying and refute it. That's all you got to do. But I know because I showed myself worthy by putting in the work. I ain't put in the work. I ain't got nothing coming.
That's right.
You got to
put. Absolutely.
You got to put in the work. You know, hence, you know, with our organization, The Better World in Israel, the motto is do the work. Do the work, then you can talk. Do the work, then you can be somebody. You don't have no works to show. You don't have no works to show. You ain't got nothing coming because eventually somebody's going to ask you what you do. What did you do? If you all that, what did you do? So,
exactly.
So,
I agree with you 100%. I agree and I believe in everything that you're saying because it does take it, and we have a motto with the Nation of Yehuda, if you're not going to stand up, don't speak up. And we mean that because there's so many people that have a whole lot of mouth that they want to speak against it, but they hiding in the shadows and talking behind the bushes.
you know, keep your comments to yourself, and if you're not going to stand up, don't speak up.
That's right. That's right. And if you ain't got nothing good to say, don't say nothing.
Enough. That's true. That is the truth. That is the truth, you know, but hey. Let me ask the audience right now. Is anyone out there that has a question, a comment, or concern? We have a lot of people on the line still, and they're listening. They're not really saying anything, but they're just taking it all in. So, at the end of the day, after 40 years, and where do you see everything that you've done? If you had to sum it up, and all of the failures and the successes. Well, I won't even say failures. I'll say challenges. And the successes that you've made, how do you look at the people now as a people? You know, because when you come out of war, you want to feel like you've been appreciated, but you walk into an arena where people don't know what you've gone through, and they have no clue as to what you've experienced. What do you see the people right now?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for that for that question, because if it wasn't for people like you, it wasn't for you, and people like you, we probably go unthanked, you know. But we knew that when we started out. We knew that our families weren't going to like us. You know, if you had wives, your wives weren't going to like you. If you had husbands, your husbands weren't going to like you. Your children was going to feel abandoned and all that kind of stuff. People going to say that you abandoned your families and you did all of this stuff. But the funny thing is when people go off to war, and they fight wars for 2 or 3 years, then they come back. They're heroes. And they've been away from their families, and nobody accuses them of abandoning their family.
That's true. That is true.
You know, we got accused of abandoning our families and all manner of things. To you, if that is what we needed to make us successful, we wouldn't be successful. We had to listen to the calling that was given us. And I'm not mad at the people or upset at our people or whatever, because they don't understand. They say our people walk on in darkness. They don't understand. They say gross darkness covers the people, you know. And they say the devil deceives the whole world. So our people are under this insidious deception. They can't see. They're sleeping that sleep, you know. And we can't be mad at them. It just is what it is. And some of us have been blessed to wake up and do what we have to do, and we're doing what we have to do on behalf of people who don't even like us or care anything about us. But we came to terms with that a long time ago. So how I see it is people do what they do. Those who can feel us and hear us and benefit from our work and our sacrifices, hallelujah. Those who can't and won't, hallelujah. That's how I look at it. That's how I look at it personally. Because I ain't going to be stuck nowhere. You understand? It's onward and upward for us. And a lot of times I tell people, for those like myself, Prince Asiel and Prince Ron, Prince Ishai, and Minister UDDL, when it comes to land, language, and culture, we've been there and done that. Building the community, we've been there and done that. So that means we know how to do that. Now, not from the armchair. We ain't armchair quarterbacks. You know what I'm saying? We ain't driving the car from the passenger seat. We drove the car from the driver's seat. So that means we accumulated the wisdom and knowledge and understanding to develop community. I have a song on the CD, and at some point we're going to talk about the music, but I have a song on that same CD that India was on with me. It's called Push On. And I have a narrative at the end of this song, and I talk about the Wright brothers. Because the Wright brothers, they were jumping out of trees and hills and cliffs and all that to sustain themselves in the air because they felt that man could fly. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
And when the Wright brothers were interviewed, they said it took them only 11 seconds to come to terms with the fact that man could fly. It only took 11 seconds. And what I want to say to our people, no matter what, because we've been dealing with all kind of forces. When you were talking about earlier about people who come up, they come to the moon and they testified about the beautiful children and the new worlds and all of that kind of stuff, that was our 11 seconds.
I know that's right.
You follow what I'm saying? So that means
yes, sir.
We can do that there. We can do it anywhere. And now we're in the second phase of that. And now there's a new wave of people coming for the second phase. And the beauty is it, the beauty of it is that a person such as yourself with such a beautiful spirit and such a great vast of knowledge, and I'm going to say this because you have to imagine that we've been on the road a long time, and to have sisters who can articulate the reality of who we are, where we are, where we're supposed to be, and what we're doing is far and few between. And it is a breath of fresh air to meet somebody like you who is intelligent, spiritual, has some geopolitical understanding, and you're just a pleasure to talk to. And I'm saying to you that if this is an indication that the new wave of people that are coming, you can imagine how ecstatic we are. Man,
yes, sir.
Half the people we can really talk to about these things, man. It's a beautiful thing. So I thank you and all of those who are with you and all of those who are like you because you vindicate us. The reality of all things that we've done have been to prepare a place for our people who really want that place that's prepared for them. And then the rest of it, whenever you wake up, you know what I'm saying, or if you don't wake up, if I got a cart, and it's got some apples and some watermelons on it. Whether you fruit or foe, you feed the feed yours.
That's true. You're absolutely right. Now let me ask you something about the music. Let's get to the music because I know you're an entertainer, and I was following some YouTube clips, and I got an opportunity to see you and Prince Asiel sponsoring one of Whitney Houston's concerts, India Irie. Let's talk about some of the musicians and the music stars that you all have come in contact with. And then my second question is do you think that they would take the time maybe one day to come on the show and share, or are they not really supportive right now?
Busy people are busy. So we're busy. We're busy at Revolution. They're busy at entertainment. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, and the twain doesn't move like that because it's not supposed to. Those of us who've been in the music industry, and those of you who think that these people are scot-free, spending money and doing what they want to do, they are paid. They are employees of the record companies. And though they are asking great sums of money, they can't go out and finance a revolution because their money will disappear, dry up on them in a minute. So they held hostage. Many of them are held hostage by these things, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of people, even today, I mean, many people are scared to talk to us or associate with us because the revolutionary side of us, they can't even relate to. And, you know, I mean, and that's just the way it is because most people have succumbed to the status quo, succumbed to this integration and all of these things and higher education, you know, to the extent where it's debilitated their ability to preserve themselves, you know. A lot of the things that they're participating in, you would think, you know, if I was a Martian and I came from Mars and I came down to visit some of these people, I'd be like, man, some of these people are suicidal. You know, because you look
right
at the things that they're doing, and only the people who don't want to live would do those things. You know, and now we have a generation now who don't even think they're gonna live to 25 and 30 and all that kind of stuff. They just expect that. So, you know. It's it is a serious place that we find ourselves in this day and time. And the funny thing is that Europeans don't even like the world they built. you hear them talking about? They protesting against their own world.
They ain't got
nowhere to go. They trying to go to Mars or the moon. But they figured out they couldn't go to the moon. And the reason why, and this is one of the best kept secrets, I'm just going to give you a little science right now, okay? They ain't on the moon, right? And they celebrated the first man on the moon, but they ain't on there. They don't have any settlements on the moon or anything. Because one of the things that they found out was that when the sun goes down, there are these filaments that pervade the atmosphere, and these little filaments are sharper than any if you sharpen a razor blade a million times, it's that sharp. And what was happening was it was cutting through the material of the spacesuits, and it was cutting into the material of the spaceships, and so they got kicked off the moon. Is my point. The Creator said, "No, go back where you came from." So other things too, yeah, but this is one thing they don't talk about. Now it's funny they put all that money up there and call themselves putting a man on the moon, but they ain't going there. They talking about going to Mars. And what they're talking about doing going to Mars is shipping some gases there to balance it out to create oxygen. You know, this is what they're talking about doing. But you know what? They scooting past the moon.
That's true.
Because you don't even hear them talking about the moon right now. They got evicted from the moon. They got there, caught themselves doing whatever they was going to do, plant a flag, do whatever, and got kicked off. So I'm saying, you know, the reality is that they don't even like the world that they created. They don't like the world that their ancestors created. So we have a lot of, you know, we have a lot of friends and family out there who feeling us, you know, because people want a better world. They tired of this oppression and this death-oriented way of life and all of that, man. Man, ain't nobody trying to do this no more. Man, I mean, if this is how you're going to rule, what do you expect? What do you expect mm-hmm. people to do? To continue under this, knowing that you're squeezing them every day? Oh, no. We couldn't continue that, you know. And we ain't approaching it with attitude. I ain't even approaching it like when in the early days we used to talk about war, right? But mm-hmm. you can't grow and make war at the same time. So that means we had to develop a psyche and develop a spirit that got out of the war posture and into the active reality of developing a world based upon our state of mind, based upon the tenets of Yahuwah. So our dog ain't even in that fight no more, because you can't mm-hmm. grow and fight at the same time.
Wow, profound. I mean, you know, you have really said some very profound things. Let me open it up to those that are in the listening audience. If you have a question, please push one. Comment, please push one, because I think it's very important. Now let's talk about your CD. Is your CD out open for distribution? It's a beautiful song.
Okay, well, because we were going to talk about this, you're going to make me talk about it on the air in front of everybody. So since you brought it up, when we did your show last week, it was such a warm, the music was received so warmly, we talked about it, you know, and the reality of it is, that in the early days, I've been making music like this all my life. I was signed with Mercury. I was with the Manhattans, Kiss and Say Goodbye Manhattans. I've done tours with Frankie Beverly, the Marley, I mean, we done all kind of stuff. I mean, I was really out there at one point. But one thing I didn't do, I didn't make the same type of music everybody made. So I have a company called Positive Music Works. So we only make music that's positive, motivating, inspiring, and uplifting. And the irony is that I've been making this music for over 50 years, and even through the development of the community, it helped to raise the spirituality of the community at one point. And then we had the Civil War, and some other things took place. But we make the music for the new day and the new time. Hence, when you listen to Israel Sky, that's for a time to come for you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all the music that we make is for this time. So Positive Music Works, yes, what we're going to do is to create the environment where the music that we've made for over 50 years, that we're going to make it available to everybody because it's the music for this time. It's the music for that soul that longs for Israel, longs for peace, longs for truth, justice, mercy, love and understanding, especially love. Because Yahweh HaKadosh Yisrael wanted to bless our relationships so that we would love ourselves, love whoever we chose to love, to procreate with, love that which we created, to love the community that we created, and to love the world that we are creating. And so we make that music. And so we're going to talk about how we're going to make that music available through the show. And what I'd like to do and what we talked about is to actually make it a fundraiser. For that kind of music, but to help with the work that Yehuda Nation and A Better World and the African Hebrew Israelite Nation, Tikkun, is doing. So that means that if we put some songs on, you may buy the song for $1 or $2, or you can donate whatever you want, and we would ship you the song. We just have to work that out technically, and we got to put dot all the I's and cross the T's, and you and I and those of your staff, we'll have those conversations at some particular point in time, but I feel like that was what the music is supposed to be used for, to help bless us and to bless others and help to create the world that we have to create. And so at certain points in time, what we'll do is during the show, we may add a couple of other songs. So mm-hmm. you can hear the range of songs and the lyrical content and feel the spirit, because it's for all of you who just want a better life, just want a better world, just want out of all of this muck and mire and this madness and being under this insidious reality that they call life. So that music is designed to motivate and inspire for us to get up and do the work that we have to do. So I appreciate that you appreciate it. So obviously I made it for you. So someday you'll be walking in Israel singing Israel's God. You know, so.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful song. And, you know, when I came into the Hebrew Israelite community, I didn't find music that was appealing to me. Some of it was okay, but most of it was rap. But, you know, the older crowd would like to have some soothing music that, right. that mellows you out. And when I heard the song, I was so in love with it. It is absolutely beautiful.
Well, that's great. And you can imagine how happy I am because, again, a prophet in his own homeland. For years, I wrote the music and people didn't understand what I was even talking about. And when you hear some of the other songs, they were for a different time. And the first wave that went in was like the army, you know, as the beachhead crew. We came in, fought the war, captured the beachhead, and began to develop an infrastructure. So the beauty of it is that all of those things, the next wave of people doesn't have to do, you know what I mean? So this particular music this particular music can soothe and can motivate and inspire and all of those things that our people need at this particular point in time, you know, to keep them on the path and to assist them spiritually in going in the direction they want to go. The music was specifically made for that. And I and Prince Aziel and Prince El Rum talked about it for a couple of hours, that the way you all received the music was so great, it inspired us. Because, again, you can imagine, you know, making music for years and years and years. And I used to make CDs and take them home to Israel, and I used to produce all kinds of artists, right, free of charge. And I would go home with 200-300 copies of whatever and just give them away to the saints in Israel. And that's absolutely true. And I just give it away free because I wanted them to have those sounds. I wanted them to be able to rely on those particular sounds whenever they were going through anything or whenever they needed, you know, some solace or to feel like somebody understood where they were, all of that. You wait till you hear some of the other music, you know. It's, I get comments often, you know, about how the music helps see somebody through, or, you know, they would play it for their families in the mornings or in the evenings before they go to bed or whatever, you know. And that's the highest compliment a musician can be paid, you know, not money, but the fact that your music motivates and inspires somebody to a higher state of consciousness, a higher state of action, positive action or whatever, you know. So I appreciate you, and I appreciate those, and we appreciate you, and we appreciate those who can feel that spirit that comes through our music, because it was written especially from our hearts to your hearts.
Hallelujah. And ladies and gentlemen, I would like to make the announcement that he is actually singing on this song with Andy Irie. And the music is so beautiful that by the time you get to the voice, it's like, wow. I mean, it's just a nice, refreshing change of pace. And it's good to know that the music is out there, because we will definitely promote it on all of our shows, because we want the people to actually be able to get a hold of it. And like I said, because some of the other music is catered toward the younger people, and it's okay if you like rap, but, you know, for our older crowd, we like soothing music, that music that's calming, or, you know, and it's just a nice song. I really do like it. So I can't wait to hear the other songs and really talk about the other songs. But do you have any other comments that you want to make? And if anyone likes to push one and ask any questions before our show is up, we have about 10 more minutes. Please go ahead.
Yes. Is anybody online?
Oh, it's a lot of people on here. They're just listening.
Yeah, they're just listening. It's okay. You know, I understand. You know, at one point I was all ears myself. You know, but I want to, before we close out, first of all, I'm operating in the stead of our host, Prince Aziel, who couldn't be here because he had a prior commitment and engagement, and the same thing with Prince Rom, who couldn't be here. I just pray I did them service by representing us, because we want to make sure that we represent our people at the highest level and be able to give them something that they can take with them and that they can use. What I want to do is I want you to remember this. I'm going to read it again from the 83rd chapter of Psalm, because I'm going to go to the 82nd chapter of Psalm, and I'm going to preface this, is that the 83rd chapter of Psalms was to keep us from realizing the 82nd chapter of Psalms. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the 83rd chapter of Psalms says, "Keep not thy silence, O God, and hold not thy peace, and be not still, O God. For lo, thine enemies make a tumult, and they that hate thee have lifted up their head and taken crafty counsel against thee and thy hidden ones, and consulted against thy hidden ones, and they have come and said, come, let us cut them off from a nation, that the name of Israel would be no more in remembrance. For they have consulted together with one consent. They are confederate against thee. Now, that means if they was trying to cut you off from being something, the word Israel, when you translate it, it means one who has power with God and man. Now, when you look at that, you can see they needed to prevent that. But now we need to go and look at what they were trying to prevent. Okay? When they killed Martin Luther King, when they killed Malcolm X, when they killed, decimated the Panthers and the Black Liberation Organization, when they caused Marcus Garvey to have a broken heart, and many of other leaders and all of our sisters and all of those who participated in the struggle of our people to be free, and then to come to the realization of being Israel, those who have power with God and man. And you would understand why that they would want to cut that off from our memory, because this is who we were destined to be. It says, God standeth in the congregation of the mighty. He judgeth among the gods. You listening?
Yes.
And then it gives you the criteria for the work of those who they were trying to cut off from being Israel. It says, how long will you judge unjustly and accept the persons of the wicked? Selah. This is what you're trying to tell Israel, that what you've been saying, this is what Israel is supposed to be doing. It says, we are supposed to be judging justly and not accepting the persons of the wicked. We're supposed to, in the third verse, defend the poor and the fatherless and do justice to the afflicted and needy. We, as Israel, we are supposed to be defending the poor and the fatherless and doing justice to the afflicted and the needy. It goes on to verse 4. It said, deliver the poor and the needy and rid them out of the hand of the wicked. We are supposed to be delivering the poor and the needy and ridding them out of the hand of the wicked. The reason being, it says, because they know not, the people don't know. And this is what you keep saying every time we talk to you and every time you're on your radio program, you're saying, we just want our people to know. It said, they know not, neither do they understand. That's why we can't get mad at them. They just don't know and they don't understand. It said, they walk on in darkness, and all the foundations of the earth are out of course. The foundations in Hebrew is musad. Musad means institutions. And said they walk in darkness, and all of the institutions of the earth are out of course. So it means that they're evil. All the institutions, this is what we find our people in. And this is our mandate to free them from these things, to defend the poor and the fatherless. And it goes on to say, I have said that ye are gods, and all of you are children of the Most High. They said, but ye shall die like men and fall like one of the princes. If you don't do what you're supposed to do and be who you're supposed to be, they said, you will fall like one of the princes. You'll just be like any other man, any other person, in darkness, walking. And the last verse says, arise, O God, and judge the earth, for thou shalt inherit all nations. And what does that really mean? From the Hebraic perspective, we will have responsibility for being the peacemakers and bringing peace to all of the nations. So when we go back to that Adam was given dominion, when we look at the word dominion, and next week I'm going to come with the literal definition so I could read it to you, but it means to be responsible. It doesn't mean to take charge and do what you want with the people and do what you want with the resources and do what you want with the animals and the water and the air and the earth. And that ain't what it means. It means that you would have the responsibility of dealing with all of these things the way Yahweh Kadosh Israel would prescribe.
so that there would be peace on earth and goodwill toward men. That's who you are, Israel. In the 83rd chapter of the Psalm, it said they was trying to cut you off from having power with God and man because they knew the 82nd chapter said you was just the opposite. They knew this. So the reality of erasing your memory is so that you would never come to the knowledge of the power of the 82nd chapter of Psalm. And that is what I'd like to sign off with, and I'd like to say that we love you with a perfect love. You're doing a great and mighty work. We respect you as a leader, but we also respect you as a divine, strong, tenacious woman. And we glory in your spirit, you know, and you make us happy. And those with you, you make us proud. And so on behalf of Prince Aziel and Prince Elram and Prince Ishai and Minister Yedidiel, I would just like to say we thank you with all our heart, with all our soul, and with all our might, and we look forward to everything that we're going to do together because we were made to do the work. And I thank the listening audience for working with us. And may God bless
you.
Okay.
One moment, because I didn't want you to hang up yet. I have one comment.
I just wanted to, I was in hold on. I almost forgot my question. I want to thank you, first of all, Professor Amil, for doing your show. And you talked a long time, and you touched on a lot of issues, and especially those that are concerning us today. And I just thank you for having the guts and courage to come forward and to do this for as many years as you've been doing it. That said, what is the wake-up call for our people, particularly our children? Like, what specifically is it that we could or should do other than what we're currently doing, which is, reaching out by every means? What is the wake-up call? Like, what is it going to take? Like, what do you see is going to be the answer? It's sometimes it's discouraging when you look at the state of mind our people in. They're walking around like they're mindless. And, even if you try to spread the knowledge, if they reject it or they accept it, you know, it's still, you know, walking around like in a state of being mindless. What is it going to take? What's the vehicle for the wake-up call?
Well, first of all, the vehicle is if they don't get what they need, it's because we don't do the work. The vehicle is us doing the work. I'm of the old adage, if you build it, they'll either come or they'll at least know they have a place to come. Because the answer to our situation is really external. America and places like it is crumbling. Now, I'm just going to give you a scientific reality to corroborate that, because I can give you 1,000 of them. But I'm going to give one. For those of you who understand the oil game and the natural gas game, there's this thing called fracking. And you all can look it up. It's called fracking, F-A-R-K-I-N-G. And you'll find out that there's a shale plate that goes around, that's under the surface of the United States, which is shale. And you know what shale is. It's a hard substance, right? So what they do, mm-hmm. they build wells. They dig down, because the natural gas is trapped in the shale. So they use over 600 different types of chemicals, and they use, for one well, they can use over 300,000 to 600,000 gallons of water. And what they do is apply pressure, bust open the shale, and create a conduit by which the gas comes up to a pipe and is shipped to you. But what it is doing, it is causing, if you all remember and pay attention, there have been more earthquakes in the United States in 1 year than it has ever been. And what they are attributing it to is that with this fracking and this drilling,
and these pollutants that they're putting in the earth, they are destabilizing the North American shelf. And so what has happened is that there have been earthquakes where there were never earthquakes before. And about 4 months ago, because I lived in California, about a year or something ago, they had almost 300 earthquakes in one weekend. And the people were definitely scared because California is built on the San Andreas Fault. That means it's a hole in the ground that runs for some miles anyway. So anybody who builds on faults, it's their fault if something happens to them. But the point is that the shelf is being destabilized by this fracking. And they said in the next 30 years, natural gas will take the place, take a major portion of the petrol industry. It'll replace the petrol industry about 30 to 60%. So what does that mean? That means that they are committed to the destruction, not just on top of the earth, but under the earth. And I'm saying that somebody that insidious, they would commit themselves to something like that. They don't mean us well. And so just from that scientific perspective, but I can give you 1,000 others, is that at some particular point you have to be looking at an external answer in those of you who reside in America. You have to be looking for an external answer because the environment is becoming more and more insidious every day from a scientific, financial, social, educational, spiritual, you name it, this place is not doing well at all. And those who are wise, they do wise things. And I feel like the wise thing is that we need to do the work, we need to build it, and at least if you tell somebody, well, you know, you shouldn't be here because this is going to happen, right, that at least you have somewhere to point them to. That's the answer.
Exactly.
So the answer is not staying in America and doing what America wants you to do. That is not it. They had 400 years to prove, you know, that they were going to treat everybody right. Well, they're treating everybody right except for us. Now, if I'm long, y'all need to get on the phone and refute what I'm saying. You push all in one and tell me I ain't telling the truth. That's
all
the answer.
Right,
we need to do the work. We need to build it. And at least if we tell them, look, you got to get out of here, they got somewhere to come.
Hallelujah, hallelujah. And so we have said our goodbyes. Is there anything else you want to say to the listening audience before we close out?
Yeah, I'd just like to say that I appreciate the audience that you have brought and given the ability for them to hear us. And we don't take it lightly because we know you are a person of integrity and character, and if you felt that we would serve your listeners well, that you had a feeling you would do that. And I just think that we have always do the things that you need for us to do, and that we represent your level of integrity as we go along and we do the work. To the people who are online, seek the truth sets you free. But what does it set you free from? It sets you free from being bound by the lies. And so it says, sheep shall hear my voice, and the stranger they shall not follow. He said, for those who have ears to hear and eyes to see, don't say everybody hear and everybody see, but we sure wish everybody could hear and everybody could see. But when the dust clears, everybody can eat them. And so I want you to know from Prince Raphael, Prince El Ron, myself, Prince Amiel, Prince Ishai, and Minister UBDL, Saul UBDL, that we love you all with a perfect love, and we're here for you, and our lives are 24/7 in service of you, just like our sisters and brothers at the Nation of Yehuda. And God bless everybody. May God you and cause his face on you and bring you peace. Thank you.
Hallelujah, hallelujah. And we thank everyone today for the show. We thank you for residing with us this time. We're actually having some technical difficulties with our connection, and I know you can hear me, but area code 202, do you have something that you would like to say? I'm trying to get this on here because our internet is messing up. But we appreciate you coming on the show. We appreciate all the things that has been done on our behalf and the radio show and everything. And we'd like to say thank you so much for all of your support. And we'd like to tell everybody shalom, shalom from the Nation of Yehuda and from Members of a Better World and Prince Asiel and Prince Amiel. We thank you for everything. So shalom, shalom, everybody. And this is the end of our show. And we hope to see you guys on Sunday. Same time, same place. We'll be here at 3:30 on Sunday. And we thank you for all of your continued commitment in helping us to make this possible. Prince Amiel, we thank you for joining us, and we will see you guys. We will talk to you guys on Thursday when we meet. I appreciate all the things that you've done. I'm going to try to play your song again. But, of course, we go through a lot of things when dealing with each other. A lot of our technical difficulties, our technical stuff is messing up on us, but it's okay because we're not going to stop. We're going to keep doing it because this is what we've been mandated to do.
That's why we love you.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Well, we're going to end it now. Everybody, shalom, shalom. Thank you so much for everything, and we're going to try to get this song on and at least play this song if we can get it going. If not, we'll definitely listen for next week because it's a beautiful song, and we want all of you all to support his music because it's beautiful music. It's soothing. It has a jazz flavor to it, and we just love it. So thank you for all of your support. Shalom, shalom, everyone from the Nation of Yehuda. We'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Shalom.